This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sent to the line by Gensel, but kept in by Ekblad. Runs a little interference into Gensel. Sent toward the net. Rebound, score! This time it's going to count!
And this is a really good play off the Reinhardt rebound. Look at Ekblad. He doesn't slam it into Vasilevskiy.
He has 118 career regular season goals. That's the franchise record. They score again off a Caravan in front.
It's the Panthers' turn. 11 seconds. Ekblad and Jones.
There is nothing better than playoff hockey. And we are underway again. Score! Just to begin 9 seconds in. Back the other way comes Hintz. Driving the net. Rantanen. He's got it. Score!
More games in the books. One significant question comes from it. Who got rolled harder? Your lawn, Brandon Hagel, or the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Well, Brandon Hagel got rolled, and I would say Zemgus Girgensons got also rolled pretty good by Mikkola on that. That cost Mikkola $5,000. My lawn was already rolled, although I got stuck in my with my lawnmower in a wet spot, and man, a lot of people stopping on the road. And do you need help? No, I got it. Pulled a four-wheeler, hooked it up, and yanked it out. It was good. But I think the Tampa Bay Lightning got rolled. They got rolled. And listen, I don't like to pick on officiating, but number one, Aaron Ekblad tied it at 2. There wasn't one player offside. There was 2 players offside on the same play. And they let the play go. A scored, challenge, offside, no goal. And then Aaron Ekblad tied it at 2 again later. And he should have been out of the game because the referees missed a clear forearm elbow to the face that should have been a 5 in the game. No penalties were called. Ekblad makes a big difference in the game in his physicality and also in scoring the tying goal.
Did the Lightning get rolled harder because the NHL did not deal with Tkachuk the same way they dealt with Hagel?
No. I actually felt like the NHL did the right thing. And it was
the right
call. Do
you think Ekblad on Hagel happens if Tkachuk is suspended?
I think they don't go together. I think that the play Ekblad made, Ekblad is in his second game back, right? Mm-hmm. The first game he plays after being suspended 20 games for PEDs, and then he comes in the second game. He wants to make an impact. It's all about physical play for him and how he wanted to make the impact. He comes in. Look, we've seen that hit happen many, many times. That's how defensemen 20 years ago were taught to go in and hit somebody. Mm-hmm. Stick low to puck, come through, forearm right in the chest, and you knock him
down.
But
it wasn't the chest.
It was in the head. But Ekblad came in trying to do what he always does. It wasn't like,
Giddy,
I'm going to go after
he.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he wanted to do what he always does and caught. His elbow came up, caught him in the head. And look, we should have replayed MSG. The referee's right there. I was going to put a tweet out last night for protecting the referee in that situation because I'm like, listen, the game is fast. The referee.
But the parody Dave Jackson account was already taken, so you couldn't put the tweet out?
I couldn't do that. No. And I love Jax. Don't go after Jax. Jax is good.
But if Mark Messier can go after Dave Jackson, I am in full pursuit mode of Dave Jackson here. Dave Jackson had the audacity to try to say, with the big screen so we could all see, look, the referee is not looking at the play. Zooms in to the ref looking at the play and Messier going, he's looking right at him.
Yeah. So the same thing happened for me, but it wasn't on live TV. So I saw the play and I'm like, the referee's right there. But the referee has to come off the wall, spin. There's players in the way. He's trying to get out of the way. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe he didn't get that good of a look because he had to kind of avoid the play and get. And then I slowed it down. And I looked at him like, he's staring right at it. Like he's 7 feet away staring right at it. So I didn't put anything on social media because I'm like, I can't defend this. I cannot defend this. And then they show the other replay. There's a linesman on the wall that's got a direct line of sight with the play. And the play was whistled right after. So linesman could easily go to the refs and say, that's a five. There's an elbow to the face. Oh, okay. Let's call a five and review the play. They have that tool. But they didn't do it. And then it goes
Ekblad. Why do you think they didn't do it? Huh? Like, do you think linesmen need to be encouraged more to get involved in this process? Do you
100%.
Think the temperature of a series prevents them because they don't want to stick their nose in? Like, I'm curious, like, of the human nature aspect of it, the stepping on toes aspect, like, because the reality is everything you're just saying. There's four officials on the ice. Somebody has to be able to step up, even if the closest guy didn't make the call. Somebody, and the only reason I phrased it the way I did about Ekblad taking advantage of Hagel is the Panthers need no reason to feel like they are Teflon. But when they get away with the Tkachuk play, and again, I know you're different on this, but I also know a lot of people are also different than you on this.
They think
based on the intent, even though the result was different, meaning Barkov appeared injured at the time, Gensel was not, the intent certainly seemed almost identical. And it's Matthew Tkachuk. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Here's the thing with when it comes to, you know, like the Florida Panthers in that situation, Ekblad in that situation. I think that Tampa winning game three, not just Tkachuk hitting Gensel at the end, but Tampa winning game three, whoop, it raised the temperature up because then all of a sudden it's like, okay, like the Tampa Bay Lightning could be back, and you know they're getting Brendan Hagel back after the one game suspension. Like there could be a lot happening. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been Braden Point. It would have been Nikita Kucherov. It would have been Gensel, Hagel, whatever. Ekblad comes in to try to make the same play. But you talk about should the linesmen step in and are they more worried about it? I always go back to who would complain more in a situation. Right? Like Timo Meier got a 5-minute major for goalie interference the other day on Freddie Anderson. They go and review the tape and they say there's no penalty on the play. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to complain that maybe the linesman went up to the referee and said, hey, we got to look at that play.
Right.
Because they did. They deemed there was nothing. Okay, we're fine. Like on this play, if the linesman go up to the referee, John McIsaac and Chris Rooney, they go to them and say, there was an elbow to the face.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure? Doesn't matter if I'm sure. Call a five, and then you'll see it on the iPad. And if I'm wrong, nobody's going to complain that, the linesman was wrong. It's just, let's make sure that we get the right call here. They gave us that tool. Let's make sure we have the right call.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do it, right? So to me, that was a miss. So John Cooper was livid on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tampa scores two quick goals. So the impact of Ekblad's hit could have turned into a positive for Tampa, but it ends up that Ekblad scores and Mikkola got a five. And all of a sudden, if Mikkola gets a five in a game on the hit on Gergensen and Ekblad's already been kicked out, Florida only has 4D to the rest of the game. But they didn't, and they had one of their best defensemen still in the game, which it makes a difference.
Well, the problem for Tampa was that they missed on the power play on the Mikkola major.
Yeah, on the 5-minute major.
And missed the opportunity to extend the lead from 2-1 to who knows what. And that's just part of the storyline here. But, and I know you didn't say this, but just because the Lightning responded with two quick goals after the missed call, the fact of the matter is they're still playing without Brendan Hagel. And regardless of what you thought of the call, non-call, it was a horrible fall to the ice. And it now appears like it's way worse than what Barkov took in the moment, only because I still don't know how Barkov returned for the next game. I don't. I don't even know what the percentage of players in the NHL is that have dealt with head injuries at some point. But Barkov is among that large group. And so I was fearing the worst, obviously, when he got railroaded by Hagel. Mm. And I don't know. I worry for every player when they're in this situation, and it's hard not to worry about Hagel. And then the reality is the, like I said, the Lightning didn't add to the lead. The Panthers get two, I mean, not unlike, I mean, identical basically to the Lightning, two goals in 11 seconds. They get two and 11. You can debate like how good of goals they were, how fortunate of bounces that, whatever. I mean, it's just, it, that was the nature of the game last night. And now I don't even know, like, you know me, I've just had a poor feeling about the Lightning in this series from the get-go, which is why I went with the Panthers. 9 times out of 10, I would take the Lightning. But I just feel like the Panthers are, they're hard to beat right now for a gazillion reasons.
Yeah, I underestimated the impact Tkachuk was going to have coming back. And obviously, Ekblad in game 3-4, I think it makes their defense better. But a couple of quick things on, like, the Ekblad second goal and the penalty kill that you talked about, the five-minute major that Tampa failed to score. Again, it comes down to make the right call early in the game and the impact of Ekblad, not just that hit that wasn't penalized, but probably his impact for the rest of the game, because this is, you know, in the that's in the first period, right? So when
second
he hits
period.
Second period. Mm-hmm. So
scoreless game halfway through the game.
Yeah, after one. You're right. Second period, it's on the left side. That's where it all happened. Who played most shorthanded time for the Florida Panthers last night or yesterday last night? Is Aaron Ekblad. Ekblad played almost 4 minutes of shorthanded time.
I mean, the Lightning might have been welcoming that. He was on for 4 goals against the previous game. It's not like he's Norris.
But
out
that
there.
five on four for 5 minutes, that major, like, look at the way that the Florida Panthers played defensively. Their penalty kill was great. Ekblad was a big part of that. Yeah. So not only does he have that impact, and then he scores a tie and goal. Here's another impact that we have. As the Vezina winning candidates were announced yesterday, Connor Hellebuyck, he's struggling right now in the playoffs. Darcy Kuemper, he was really good in the third and overtime, but still the numbers are a little rough in the playoffs. And you're looking at Andrei Vasilevskiy, who that second goal was a terrible, terrible rebound that he gave up to Aaron Ekblad. The puck has come in. He sees the puck come in the whole way. He's looking to redirect it in the corner, and he, I don't know if he kept his eyes off of the puck or something. He didn't see it all the way through, and he missed it. You could see his right blocker hand and stick kind of wanting to flip the puck to the corner, and the puck went right to the middle, and he missed it. And that's on Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Yeah, but it's also on the two guys that didn't cover Ekblad. Also, he can't possibly be that wide open.
He can't possibly be that wide open, but if he puts the rebound in the corner, we don't talk about it.
I know.
And that's your job. And look at Vasilevskiy. I was alerted by this from Frankie Corrado this morning. And Frankie Corrado does great work up in Toronto. He said, here's Vasilevskiy's numbers, the three trips to the Stanley Cup Finals. 927 save percentage, win the cup. 937 save percentage, win the cup. 922 save percentage, goes to the final, loses to Colorado. The next three playoffs, 875, 897, 884 right now. And the year that they lost to Toronto was an 856. Mm-hmm. That has been the problem. Like, Vasilevskiy has to be like 950, 920 for Tampa to be good. And right now he's not. And Tampa's down 3-1.
Right. Correct. But this is also not just Vasilevskiy. This is every team pretty much needing this, right? Like some teams overcome it. And it's still a super, 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 super small sample size. So I can't even get into those types of numbers. Like over the course of a whole playoff run, like you're saying, yes. And the thing is if they come back to win this series, there's a better than average chance that Vasilevskiy will end up in the playoffs with a save percentage of 9-10 or better, right? Like that's just averages. That's just the way it goes. But he had stabilized, and then that was a tough third period for sure.
Tough 11 seconds, right? He gives up the second goal, and then
so
the
what
other
did you
one,
think when,
it's a
like,
good deflection, and it, but it still beats him through the armpit, right? It's still a goal that goes through him.
We've never seen that before. The, you know, Lightning scoring 2 and 11 seconds, and then the Panthers scoring 2 and 11 seconds.
Yeah.
Did it remind you of anything, though? Especially the Panther portion of it, because it happened late in the third?
I can't off the top of my head. I'm trying to think of my playoff experience in Buffalo, but then didn't involve me. Then I don't care.
Okay. Well, fine. I'll just be over here and I'm not going to comment.
Just kidding. I just wanted to make a snarky comment.
Why? For scoreboard purposes, you're still
No, if it doesn't
me.
Involve me, I don't care. That's basically how selfish I can be. So, yeah.
Oh, we could go in a million different directions with that one. No, it's not because it's the first round, and it's not because it didn't happen in the last minute, but it did remind me of 2013 and the Hawks' famous 17 seconds.
Yeah.
So they're in Boston, game 6, chance to win the cup, but they're losing with a minute 15 to go. Bickle and Boland score 17 seconds apart. So not only do the Bruins not extend the series, not go to overtime, they lose and have to watch the cup paraded out on home ice in the most stunning fashion. So that's kind of where I went last night, was like, oh, this feels a little bit familiar. And part of it comes from the Panthers having the championship DNA.
Exactly.
Which the Hawks had at the time, because they had already won in 2010. So you sometimes see similarities, right, in teams. And it just reminds you of how we can wide brush either way at the drop of a hat, right?
You could have
sat there and said, wow, the Panthers, look at them. They just choked 2 in a row on home ice, and now the Lightning are back in the series. But we're talking about 11 seconds of fortunate play that results in them now having a stranglehold on the series.
Yeah, I mean,
crazy, right?
look at tonight. We're getting the Oilers and the Kings tonight. The series tied at 2. You could say that it should be 3-1 for the Kings. You could say that it should be 3-1 for the Oilers.
Or it could really be swept. The Kings could have swept them. The Kings could have exercised the 3 years of demons here and already be on 100%. To round number 2.
And now where's the pressure? It's all on the Kings. Because the Oilers are like, you know what? Like, we have Calvin Pickard in that. You know, we like,
and what's his
Evan
save
Bouchard.
Percentage?
Oh, it's not good.
No, but that's my point. Is it's 2 games. The sample size isn't great. But guess what? He's 2-0.
So, and he's given up a bad goal in pretty much every game.
Yep.
But the Oilers are probably the one team that should have embraced that mentality of, like, we have to outscore our defensive issues here. Look at how in game one, period 3, they just basically played to score, right? Their mentality was we need to score goals. Mm-hmm. We cannot just say, hey, we need to play good defensively. Let's score goals. John Klingberg played almost 10 minutes in the third period of game 4. You don't play John Klingberg 10 minutes if it's not just about we got to score. Mm-hmm. And Evan Bouchard, who's made some really tough play defensively, ends up scoring 2 goals in game 3, 2 goals in game 4, both in the third period in game 4. And they were talking about, and you talk about hockey history, Chicago, and all of this. During the broadcast, they brought up who's the only defenseman to score a hat trick by scoring the third goal in overtime? And it was Eric Desjardins in 93, game 2 against the LA Kings. So now it brought back the LA Kings aspect of it or whatever. But that's what the Oilers are doing right now. It's all about, let's just, who cares about the defensive side? Who cares about our goalie? Let's go out and try to score goals, as many goals as we can. And that's worked. That's worked in the third period of game 3. That's worked in the third period of game 4. And that has to be the way they play game 5 tonight, because if not, you're giving the Oilers a chance to play to their identity.
I'm looking up a defenseman's name right now based on that little nugget of trivia you just presented.
Well, Bouchard didn't get the hat trick, so it doesn't matter.
The only defenseman
to do it is Eric Desjardins still.
Right. But do you know what I thought of when you mentioned defensemen and playoff hat tricks?
Ooh, no.
Andy Delmore.
Oh.
May 7th, 2000, against Pittsburgh in a 6-3 Flyer win.
Wow.
Yep.
Was that the series that ended with Primo scoring in a triple OT or quadruple OT
on Ron Tugnutt?
Five overtime on Ron Tugnutt.
On Ron Tugnutt, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Man. That game ended, that one you're speaking of, the five overtime, it ended around between 2:30 and 2:40 a.m. Eastern time. My alarm was set for 3 that day because I was doing the morning shift on radio in Ottawa. So needless to say, didn't bother. Just decided to head right to work.
Took a shower and, gosh. I mean, we were talking about, like, Ottawa was down 3-0 and Claude Giroux was on that Flyers team.
Yeah.
That came back from a 3-0 deficit to the Boston Bruins to, you know, win it in game 7. Mm-hmm. Simon Gagné was on that team. Again, he actually scored the game-winning goal game 7.
Yeah.
But he was on that, he was actually on the ice with Keith Primeau on that 5 overtime game that the Flyers beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. So there's players that somehow in the playoffs always seem to like take a step forward, right? They're always there in the middle of the action. And there's guys that don't. Like Connor Hellebuck is one that seems to not be there. When the playoffs and when the heat is on, it's like, where's Connor Hellebuck? There's guys that they go the other way. They're like, they're playoff performers. You know they're going to be there. But there's some that are nowhere to be found, and Connor Hellebuck is one of them.
So is that is not fair because Kopitar is one of those players and has performed and won cups with LA. But the way you just described it and the guys that are winners, in like, are the Oilers not in the driver's seat here because of Draisaitl and McDavid and Bouchard? Like, do they not feel like the ones that are going to make the difference? Or is it just whatever way the wind's blowing, because this series is likely going to go 7 anyway, because the Kings will probably win on home ice tonight, and then the Oilers will probably rally from 4-0 down in game 6 to win and then force game 7, and then everybody's going to talk about, oh my gosh, the Kings are never going to overcome this Edmonton hurdle.
I think that's a very valid observation of thinking you're the Kings, and for 4 years now you've played the Oilers in the playoffs, and the first 3 when the Oilers way, and now you felt like this is your time. Yeah. This is different this year. And after winning the first 2, now you've let it slip. And yes, the Kings let it slip. Look, the Oilers played and they won. But I feel like both of those games were in the hands and in the control of the LA Kings and let it slip. So there is that factor. I'm not going to say the Ottawa Senators are going to come back, but the same kind of like theory or whatnot has been surrounding Marner and Matthews in Toronto, right? Only one playoff win.
Fair?
I think, you know what I think? I think that that narrative should surround Sheldon Keefe more. And right now, Sheldon Keefe's in New Jersey and he's got injured roster to deal with. But I want to see Sheldon Keefe being able to say, hey, I'm the coach that's going to put my team in the best position to win. Right now it's tough, and I get it, right?
His roster is not...
It's not good.
I mean, they're too injured. I wouldn't put anything on Sheldon Keefe this
year. But
this
year I'm going to hold judgment. But if he had to have Jack Hughes and Dougie Hamilton and everybody healthy, and he would be down 3-1 to the Carolina Hurricanes, I would be holding judgment. I would not be withholding judgment.
Yeah, I don't think they would be down, quite frankly. I like the Devils roster when healthy.
Yeah, but so. You know, now they have an opportunity. No Freddie Anderson tonight.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, so tonight, so did you just throw out any predictions on Toronto, Ottawa, New Jersey, Carolina? Did I miss
Toronto,
those?
Ottawa. Toronto's going to, again, like... My player's mentality, if I'm Ottawa, is we just had to win one game in Toronto.
Right.
Because then we come back home, game 6, we're going to win. And then we have game 7 where we can flip a coin. Right. Yeah. That's the easy way to look at it. But that's the positive mindset you got to have.
Okay. So you also said something yesterday that I didn't challenge you on for like clarity. You said Toronto... has the better goaltending?
Yes.
Do they have the better goaltender?
Oh, taking careers, obviously Linus Ullmark has more on the resume and he's the better goaltender. But if I'm going to say right now, okay, we play street hockey, backyard pond, and there's two goalies to pick, and I got first pick, and I got to pick a goalie. I'm looking at Linus Ullmark, looking at Anthony Stolarz. Stoli, you're my guy. Like, I feel like I want Stolarz in net right now over Linus Ullmark. That's how I look at it in the playoffs.
Hmm. Would you have said that a year ago?
No. Like, I had some people reach out, you know, say, what do you think of Anthony Stolarz and teams that are probably looking into him? And I'm like, he's big. He seems to, you know, be one of those goalies that have all the tools, but never was able to do it over a long period of time because he would have had his chance. He's a backup. Did you know Anthony Stolarz has never, this is his first professional playoffs. He never played in the playoffs in his pro career. Mm-hmm. The teams that he was on never made the playoffs. Or he never played because he was
the
backup.
He won the cup last year.
I know. I'm saying the team that he was on when he was a starter
never made
the playoffs. Yes. And or he was a backup and never played. Like, that's what it was. He never had a saying of say, hey, I know what that's like to be the starter in the playoffs because he's never been that guy.
Mm-hmm. I guess the reason for the revisit of the comment yesterday and the reality of the fact that they are playing today, the reason I bring it up is because the Leafs are coming off of a loss, and this is the first time Stolarz has lost in a long time.
Yes.
We saw him roll through the end of the regular season, including yet another shutout against the Buffalo Sabres. And so I don't imagine one game matters a lick. It's just, I'm curious of what the feeling is like when you never lose. And it feels like he was never going to lose again. And the Leafs could have very easily swept that series based on everything they do right and the fact that they were clearly pretty comfortable going to another overtime game.
And I think that's where, if you're the Ottawa Senators, you have to start playing a little bit of mind games and the way you answer questions after, so that the media runs out to the Leafs and start asking questions about, this is three overtimes. Game 2, 3, 4 went to OT. Could have gone either way, right? And the Ottawa Senators found a way to win game 4 in OT, but it was one shot one way or the other. And I think that that's almost like what you have to keep banging the drum, so that now the media goes out to Stolarz and say, do you feel like this series is a lot closer than 3-1 because three games went to OT and it could have gone either way? And then they ask Matthews that, and they ask Marner that, and they ask Craig Berube that. And you have to, like, put that, plant that seed. Mm-hmm. Because I feel that if the game is close now in the third period, and then if it goes to OT again, all of a sudden you're Toronto, you're like, man, again, like, is this close? This team is closer. And now you start, does it work? I don't know that it works. But at least you put that, you put that doubt a little bit. You try to get any advantage you can.
I'm glad you asked the tough questions of yourself. That's exactly what I was thinking. It is Toronto, Ottawa tonight, New Jersey, Carolina, Minnesota, Vegas. Will we ever talk about the Wild and the Golden Knights again on this show? Edmonton and LA. We continue to talk about that series perhaps more than others. Guess what? There was another game last night.
Yes.
And Dallas is in a very familiar position to a year ago. We'll touch on that when we come back at the end of this week. Well, the end of the work week. It's another Friday night in Banditland. This time, it's the semifinals. It's game one in a best of three. We've never said it before. Buffalo-Vancouver in this playoff matchup. The Bandits are gunning for a three-peat. They need to get through this best of three, clear that hurdle, get to the final, and it all starts semifinal-wise against Vancouver this Friday at 7:30. Visit bandits.com/tickets to purchase yours today. Just shy of 18,000 for last week's quarterfinal win over San Diego. Can't wait to see Bandit Land filled once again as they take on the Warriors on Friday. We're back after this.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back on Sabres Live. Amherst continue their pursuit of a series win in Syracuse on Thursday.
Yep.
Tomorrow we're talking to Michael Leone, or Thursday? When are we doing that?
Well, producer Jeff is going to let us know in a second here. That's Thursday. Game day, we'll talk to Michael Leone.
Yeah, I was so excited to speak to him tomorrow. Can we not will that to happen? Or
It's his routine. It's his, like, he has talking to us after the morning skate. It's been his routine. And he likes that. I feel he loves having that little Sabres Live chat.
Okay. Well, as they...
Especially when they're on the road, he's like, what am I going to do? I don't have to run home. I don't
he's
have,
not a morning skate guy, so...
Yeah, yeah, so he's just, he's waiting. He's waiting. He's preparing for us.
He is. And it was, you and I appreciate this more because we like to belittle the big number when it comes to face-off statistics, right?
Yes.
It's like, don't focus on the big number. Like, stop telling me somebody won 52%. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It like the one single moment, like scoring at the end of the second period on the power play. Yuri Kulik, right? Like that's cool. That's a face-off win. But if
I
told
you
the
Amherst
only won like
20%
of face-offs on Sunday, then people would be in a panic, like, oh my gosh, they have to fix this area.
Somebody told me a funny analogy when it comes to face-off, and he asked to remain anonymous, so I'm going to say, it's like a coin flip. You know the coin flip is going to be 50% of the time, right? Like, talk about the Bills in overtime. Like, it's 50, but if you win the game, and you lose the coin flip, who cares? You won the game. But if you lose the game because of the coin flip, you're like, ah, coin flip mattered. Face-off for the same thing. If you win games and win a lot of face-offs, face-offs were great. If you win a game and you had 25% face-offs, you don't mention them. Or if you score a goal off a face-off, you'll mention it when it matters. But in the grand scheme of thing, it doesn't usually. Nobody knows who. Well, actually, I'll say this. I was going to say, nobody cares who wins the opening face-off. Unless you're the Dallas Stars and you score 9 seconds into the game last night.
Did it come off a face-off win, though?
It came off a face-off win, a dump in, and then a terrible goal given up by Mackenzie Blackwood.
Well, thank God for dump-ins, because we need more of them in today's game. Because that just like adds to another whole cliche. Anyway, recognizing that these are all components of the game, we move forward. By the way, before we get to Michael Leone on Thursday, Nick Weiss, he of the unbelievable highlight reel goal in the quarterfinal against San Diego.
Yeah.
I mean, I know lacrosse is filled with them, but anyway, maybe we'll dissect it. Like in the form of a mini 30 for 30 tomorrow with Nick Weiss when he joins the show.
Like, you know what? We should. Like, setup of the play. How did I all come together? Was it discussed beforehand? Like,
it's never discussed. He always last minute sees a green light and says, I can do this. And then he defies all odds behind him, around him, in front of him, and usually ends up with the greatest celebration of every game upon scoring these types of goals. That is Nick Weiss in a nutshell. And I can't wait to have him on the show tomorrow. Okay. Oh, we're getting a little teaser of it.
A little teaser. Yeah.
Side. It really was phenomenal.
That allowed the Bandits to then take a lead like later in the half, right? And 5-2 lead, which ended up the game winning goal. But Weiss's goal was the 4-2 goal. Yeah.
It was amazing. And all part of another Bandit win as they strive towards a three-peat. But they have a daunting challenge ahead in this Vancouver series that is a best of three starting on Friday. Okay, enough stalling. I know there's Avalanche fans out there who are worried once again, as they should be. Because last year, Dallas took them down in six on a double overtime winner from Matt Duchene. Is the same fate about to fall on the Avs again in game six this year?
I'm worried for Colorado just because other than MacKinnon, like, who is really jumping up out of the screen and saying, like, oh... Like, Kel McCarr doesn't have a ton of points in this series. Like, he doesn't have a huge impact so far in the series, and that worries me. So, look, did they get good goaltending in last night's game? Yeah, Mackenzie Blackwood wasn't good. It didn't start well. He got beat in a reverse VH situation where it went off his skate, and in, he didn't use the skill set properly. So Wyatt Johnson jumped all over it. But look at the way that Colorado Dallas is able to get goals by Wyatt Johnson. He scored a couple. Mason Marchman, Mikko Rantanen got his first. Like, there's been a lot of players getting involved in the offense for Dallas. Tyler Seguin is getting involved. You've got Duchesne who's gotten involved. Like, there's been a lot of guys getting involved. With Colorado, it's McKinnon. That's all there is. And I think this is hurting the Colorado Avalanche right now.
Stars are still doing it. Now, granted, last night was the first night where they actually had a lead for the game, because the other two wins all came, you know, both came overtime situations with basically no leads throughout the course of regulation play.
Was it like 7 second lead they had?
They had like a minute and a half total in the two previous wins. So anyway, they're still doing this Dallas Stars 3-2 series lead without Robertson and without Heiskanen.
Yes.
So without putting the cart too far in front of the horse, if Dallas wins the series, do they win the Stanley Cup?
Well, I think that I picked the Colorado Avalanche to win the Stanley Cup because I felt like the winner of that series was going to be the Stanley Cup winner. I wasn't loving Dallas down the stretch, so I decided to go Colorado ahead of Dallas because Dallas had lost 7 in a row to end the season, and they didn't look good. And they lost Jason Robertson in the last game of the season. And the word was Miro Heiskanen was not going to come back until probably second round. So I'm like, they're not going to get past Colorado that way. So I'm going to pick Colorado to win the cup. But most people would have said the winner of Dallas-Colorado is your cup favorite. And Dallas, when you look at the odds before the playoffs started, they were, I believe, the top team when you look at the odds at Vegas for winning the Stanley Cup. So the gambling community, the Vegas community, felt like Dallas was the team to go all the way. And yes, maybe they don't take in all of the aspects when it comes to injuries and all of that, but they take in a lot. And the algorithms, they spit out numbers, and they felt like Dallas was the team. And they've shown how they can be the team by winning big games. Like game two was a huge game. Game three was a huge game. Game five was a huge game. Like, those are big game for Dallas to go out and win.
So, sorry, what was your answer?
My answer is yes. Dallas, if they beat Colorado, would become my favorite to win the cup.
Yeah, I only ask it based on the likelihood of having Robertson and Heiskanen back as you go forward.
Look at the roster.
It worked for Dallas giving Ottinger a rest in the midst of game four, which they lost. Might the Avs be able to duplicate that, though, after giving Blackwood a rest yesterday and then returning home for game six?
Mackenzie Blackwood and Jake Ottinger are different types of goalies, right? Like, Ottinger, I think, is a better goaltender.
Well, he's got more playoff experience.
Yeah, he does. Mackenzie Blackwood, unfortunately, was kind of going from team to, well, New Jersey to San Jose and not in a situation to get that experience. Right. But I still think Jake Ottinger is a better goalie. If I put one through, you know, 16 in the playoffs, I would have had Ottinger ahead of Mackenzie Blackwood. And he's played really well. Now, Game five was the very first one that I thought, Blackwood a little leaky. Blackwood not sure of himself. How does he respond? I've seen Jake Ottinger respond in the past from a so-so game. He's had a few of them, by the way. Jake Ottinger has had some bad games in his career in the playoffs.
Right.
So he's had that experience of bouncing back. This was the first time Mackenzie Blackwood was in that position. I want to see what he's got in game six. It is going to be home in Colorado, so maybe that helps a little bit. But yeah, I want to see what he's got before I can, you know, confidently say that Colorado will make a push to game seven.
Do you want to mention Minnesota Vegas since they're playing tonight?
But we have to, you know.
It was Minnesota not on Vegas purpose. It just seems like they get pushed aside here. But hey, this series, like everything in the West going into last night, 2-2. So I suppose that's advantage Minnesota for being 2-2 at this point.
I feel like it's advantage Minnesota, and I feel like it's advantage Kaprizov, it's advantage Eriksson Ek, it's advantage Boldy, it's advantage Rossi, it's advantage like their top guys. Mm. Like, you know, where is Eichel and where is Stone and where is those guys with Vegas being able to be a game changer? I know Jack's a great player. He would have had a 100
points this year. Though.
They did win last game, but it took just everything and then OT to try to get there. Jack would have had 100 points this year if he had missed the games down the stretch and wasn't injured. I haven't seen them take the game over. I thought Vegas was going to roll over Minnesota. And because their experience, they've been there, done that. They've won a cup. It hasn't been that. And Gustafsson, I feel, has outplayed Aiden Hill. So that's, you know, there was a question
mark.
Who
you got tonight?
I've got Vegas tonight.
I took Minnesota in the series, so I think they need tonight.
I got Vegas in the series, so I got to stick with
it. So I'll take Minnesota, because otherwise I'm not sure the Wild have the chance that I thought they did. Regardless, I look forward to it. Minnesota and Vegas tonight, part of a four-game slate. We mentioned the Amerks. We mentioned the fact we'll speak to Michael Leone, head coach, on Thursday, which is game day, as they look to get through this series against the Crunch in the form of a sweep. They won't have Sevi Komarov. The update today was that he is doing better, but he is in concussion protocol, and he will miss some time. Of course, that was in the fight with Finley on Sunday, all part of the Amerks 4-0 win, but Komarov was knocked out of the game and now out for some time, according to head coach Michael Leone. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
The finalists are Werenski, Makar, and Quinn Hughes for this year's Norris.
Yeah, I mean, Cale Makar is probably going to win this, and he had a fantastic season. 30 goals, the first defenseman to get to 30 goals since, played against him in Washington.
Mike Green.
I always forget his name because Washington transitioned from Mike Green to John Carlson, and it's almost like they're the same player. Right?
Oh, gosh, no.
I feel like they are, like, offensive. Like, John Carlson's offensive. A better all-around defenseman than Mike Green, in my opinion, but yes. I feel like they transition from one to the other very seamlessly.
Which of the three, Quinn Hughes, Werenski, and Makar, will not finish their careers with their current teams?
Quinn Hughes, 100%.
Thank you. Sorry, that was Captain Obvious question of the day.
Captain Obvious question.
I had
a couple conversations with people about Quinn Hughes and what should, because we talked about that. Yeah. You were like, Vancouver Canucks have to trade him right away. Like they want to get
value so somebody gets 2 years out of him. Yes.
And I was thinking, you know what? Like maybe, but you're in a tough place. You can only trade him to one spot, and that's the New Jersey Devils. And Devils is not giving up Nico Ischier or anybody for him, but still. Like, and most people I talk to are like, nah, you got to do it now. If you know you're not going to be able to keep him, you have to do it now.
Okay, so don't.
And Shayna is like, if you do it now, fold the franchise. So that's what's happening.
Well, the good news is for the Canucks is there's a PWHL team now.
Yes.
So they won't have this void of professional hockey. So that's good for the city of Vancouver if they do have to fold the Canucks in wake of this. However, when we discussed it, and you just mentioned, we talked of like, whoa, you know, like if he wants to go to the Devils, just trade him to the Devils. How about not thinking about it that way? Think about it only from maximizing value, giving him to another team for 2 years. Like, if you're any of the other teams, knowing that you've got a 2-year window to get Quinn Hughes, what are you willing to pay to force the issue? To take this 2-year rental.
The perfect example is like Buffalo. If you think that Buffalo, you're like, hey, with Quinn Hughes in the next 2 years, we could make a big run and it would get us going, right? And maybe we lose them in 2 years, but at least we have 2 years to get ourselves in the playoffs and build that. I'd do it. You know what? We have a lot of prospect, a lot of picks, a lot of younger players. Put a package together and see if Quinn Hughes works.
Put a package together at Sabres Live on social.
Tell us.
We will revisit this tomorrow. Tomorrow we're not going to have Michael Leone, but we will have Nick Weiss. And we're doing a mini 30 for 30 on his goal. See you tomorrow on Sabres Live.